IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We're a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring a fresh perspective to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to today's episode. I'm Sridhar Krishna from Takshashila Institution. I'm a senior scholar at Takshashila and I work on a project called 20 Million Jobs. We believe that India needs 20 million jobs each year, but unfortunately, we generate less than 2 million jobs each year. So the gap is huge and we're trying to come up with ideas on how to fix this gap and what can be done to find a better future for a large population of people in our country who are very young. And I'm very happy to have with me today Meenu Chawla. Meenu is a student of the current cohort of our flagship GCPP program, which is a graduate certificate in public policy at Takshashila. And she's been doing a project on something which is quite close to my heart, which is around manufacturing and why India seems to have missed the bus on manufacturing jobs. And so I'm going to talk to Meenu about this. Meenu also represents the second generation of a manufacturing business in Bangalore. And she has moved back from Dubai.
The last place was Dubai. Yeah.
And she's moved back to India a couple of years ago to join the family business and work at that. She's also a tourism development consultant. And she's got multiple interests. So it's always wonderful to talk to people with many interests. And so welcome on the show, Meenu.
Thank you for having me here, Sridhar.
It's wonderful. So let's talk about manufacturing and let's get right down to it, right? So when you look at the working age, India's population is close to 1.4 billion. And the working age population in India is about 870 million people. We have a very low labor force participation rate, which means that around 450 million people are in the labor force. And when we talk about the labor force, we mean not people who are all at work, but these are people who are either at work or looking for jobs. So a large percentage of our population does not even try to look for a job. And that is basically because people are despondent and they don't think that even if they try for a job, they're going to get one. When you drill this number down a little bit further, when you go down from this 450, 460 million people, and you find that only 10% of them are in formal employment, either permanent or temporary. If you look at the permanent employment amongst this, this is just some 36 million people. So for a country with 1.4 billion population, we only have about 36-40 million people who have permanent jobs in the formal sector and have benefits which are reasonably decent and have wages which are acceptable and have a decent lifestyle, right? So I think that's a very small percentage of our population and that explains a lot of our poverty in our country, correct? Many countries move from the agricultural economy to manufacturing and then on to services. India, for a large number of years, has had a very small percentage of our working population in the manufacturing sector. This includes formal and informal sector, etc. I don't think it's more than 15 to 18% for a long time. And that's remained stagnant and it's not really grown. Why do you think that's the case, Meenu? And what does your research tell you about why is India not such a great manufacturing powerhouse? Why aren't we like big at manufacturing?
I think this is something that stunned me as well when I started looking into this. Of course, you know, the traditional development trajectory of most advanced economies, and not just development trajectory, but also the movement of labor has been from agriculture to manufacturing to services. And when you start looking at the numbers, it appears that India has leapfrogged. And though leapfrogging has this positive connotation, But it's not necessarily the case with India. So you know, when we were looking at numbers, let's say in 1999, 60% of India's workforce was employed in agriculture. It's come down to 44% now. In services, it was 28% and it's gone up to 44%. It's manufacturing where it's gone from, you know, 11-12% and stayed to about 12-13%. So it's clearly stagnated. So what we see is, you know, the labor force has jumped from agriculture to services, just forgetting manufacturing on the way. And at the same time, we think back to early 90s when the economic reforms were introduced. You know, the idea was at the time for manufacturing to absorb the labor surplus from agriculture. And that's clearly not happened. What have we missed here, really? And this is what we started looking into. This is what the project that we did at Takshashila was about. How do we revitalize the manufacturing sector in India? And, you know, then the team and I started looking into productivity also at the global level. And you know, India's productivity compared to other countries of similar standing is actually quite low. The value added per hour in manufacturing in China is around $10, purchasing power parity adjusted. Brazil is $13. Indonesia is $25 to $26. India is only at about $5. So there's, you know, not only are we not employing people enough, but the problem is also that we're not contributing enough to the GDP. So there's clearly something wrong with India's manufacturing sector. So when we dig deeper, we realize that India is really struggling to exploit economies of scale. And the root cause, at least for my team and I, is that of firm size. Data shows that 65% of India's manufacturing firms actually employ less than 10% employees. 85% employ less than 50 workers. These are numbers from 2005 to 2010, thereabouts. At the same time, you know, going back to the point that I was raising earlier about productivity, we also see that the total factor productivity in India's manufacturing sector is twice as high in firms with 250 or more employees. And it's actually really pretty low when it comes to 10 employees or less. So this is where, if you start linking productivity, firm size, and then, you know, the larger macro picture, where we're also talking about employment numbers and the contribution to GDP, the problem sort of seems to appear is it lies with the firm size. And this is what we arrived at through this project.
Yeah, so that's very interesting. I think the fact that if you look at India, traditionally, we have believed that we need to encourage the small and medium-sized enterprises. There's been this whole small-scale industry, large number of products which were reserved only for the small-scale sector. We used to have a big license raj which prevented firms which are large from becoming larger and to sort of get somewhere. But one was hoping, like you mentioned, with the 1991 reforms, that would just change and companies could then grow unfettered by all these laws and grow to a size which was globally competitive. Reliance was one of those firms of that era which really took advantage of that and just became really huge and sought to become the largest man. I mean, they set up like the plant at Jamnagar, which is among the largest in the world. So those kind of things are very rare in India. Most of our firms typically remain like small. I too, like you, have a family which has been involved in a manufacturing business. And I also know how it's been and how there were very few incentives to really make the firms much larger. It was much simpler to have smaller firms, each firm manufacturing one or two products, while you could have created a much larger and much more efficient enterprise if incentives were there to become large. And that's been something that's always bothered me. And there are, before we jump to the meat of the discussion around manufacturing jobs and why size of these manufacturing enterprises has affected the growth in manufacturing jobs, I think I'd like to bring to your attention a couple of things. One is that while India has, since the 90s, grown its GDP at a very reasonably good rate, I think like an average growth rate of between 6-8% over three decades is a fairly good rate for a country. And we have grown quite significantly. But if you look back at our employment elasticity numbers, those have also, they've fallen quite dramatically in that period. So when we were growing at the rate of, say, 3%, 2.5%, 3% in the 70s, our employment elasticity used to be about 0.9, which meant that with such small growth in GDP, we actually grew our employment growth in our country was at a reasonably decent 2 to 3% per annum. While today, even though we have grown at 6 to 7% over the last three decades, the employment elasticity dropped quite dramatically to 0.4 in the 90s and then now to less than 0.1, which means that even when we grow at, unless our economy grows at over 10% per annum and we manage to bring our employment elasticity up to 0.4, 0.5, we are not going to be able to create the number of jobs that India requires. That is, if you want to create 20 million jobs and you have like over 450 million people today, unless you grow that by about 10% and with an employment elasticity of 0.4, you're not going to create those 20 million jobs, right? So that's one. And in order for this to happen, there are typically like, you know, six different types of labor transitions which happen, which is like farm to non-farm, rural to urban, school to work, vocational, self-employment to productive wage, unorganized to organized, and home to work, right? So these are the kind of transitions which typically labor transitions which happen, which allow countries to grow and progress. In India, these things have not happened at the pace at which one would have liked them to happen. And I agree completely with you that the problem is really to do with the low growth in manufacturing jobs. Because manufacturing jobs, unlike, say, services or some of these areas, do not require very highly skilled people, right? You can manage with unskilled and semi-skilled people, have a place in a factory flow. So that's very important for a country like India to be able to get large number of people employed. Countries like Bangladesh, etc., and China, of course, but even Bangladesh has succeeded in attracting large companies. What do you think were really the incentives for manufacturing companies in India to remain small? Can you sort of list a few?
Yeah, so it's certainly all around regulations. It's interesting that you brought up the reservation of, in production for certain items on the list. You know, it started in the 60s. I think it's also helpful to look at it, our industrial history, and also which kind of informed our culture as well. You know, sometimes, if I may, talk about it as our post-independence preponderance of classical Gandhian thinking, right? You know, the small scale industries. So a lot of our regulations, our policies have been informed by that, in my opinion. You know, I really do think of it as sort of an obsession that India has with you know, small scale industries, which are now called MSMEs, being drivers of employment. But that really hasn't panned out.
I think the reason people thought about small-scale industries, was the general understanding that India has a large population and large enterprises would typically try and use technology very heavily and they have the capital and access to capital and therefore may choose capital-intensive manufacturing to labor-intensive manufacturing. And therefore, the belief was that small-scale industries, by their very nature and because of their paucity of funds, etc., might choose to employ a large number of people. But that didn't happen. And do you want to sort of tell all of us like why that was the case? Why didn't the small-scale industry go out and have... I mean, in a country like India, just think about it. We were capital scarce and surplus in labor. And yet... we seem to have, not created the number of jobs that are required. Why do you think that happened?
You almost mentioned it. It is actually the labor laws, the labor regulations, amongst many factors, of course. But I think this is quite critical. We are currently incentivized to keep our firms small. So if we look at, where, let's say, a firm, when the social security benefits that the firm has to pay to its employees, when does that kick in? It's when you have 10 or 20 or more employees, you know, not under 10 or 20 employees, actually, depending on whether the firm has electricity or not. So it's, you know, firms are incentivized to remain small, to keep under 20 employees, something as basic as that. You and I both come from manufacturing backgrounds, and we both know that it's easier to set up more firms rather than, you know, set up 10 or 12 firms rather than actually grow one firm. And this is extremely prevalent in India. So you know, it's laws like this, plus there are gazillion laws. You know, so the compliance burden, of course, as soon as you start growing, the compliance burden increases. So people, entrepreneurs find it easier to keep their firms small. And should they want to grow, add more firms to their portfolio rather than increase one big firm.
Yeah, I think I want to dive deeper into that in a minute. But before we go forward, let's take a short break. Okay, welcome back. So I think we were just starting to talk about how the laws in our country have incentivized companies to remain small. There were many laws, right? So there were a large number of labor codes, labor laws in our country. The compliance burden, like you mentioned, was very high and has been very high. And it's almost impossible to comply with every single law. I was, in fact, reading an article a little while back, and written by Manish, where he talks about how it's many of these laws are actually contradict each other. So if you comply with one, you end up being at variance with another. So those kind of things. But I think there has been some progress in that area, and I think it might be worthwhile talking about that now. While there have been some things which have been really hard. For instance, the Industrial Disputes Act. I think that was another area. So people, except in specific industries which were considered essential services, workers could just go on strike. But today, with the new labor codes, they have to give 60 days notice before going on strike. So that's one thing, which ensures that there's enough time to mediate, negotiate, and avoid stoppage of work. At the same time, manufacturers are also in a position to ensure that their customers don't get impacted very adversely by a sudden stoppage of work and so on. So there's long-term health of the firm can be protected. At the same time, it just does not prevent the workers from having a right to go on strike. I think that's important. But it does make a bit of a difference in the way it can go. The other area that I was reading about is also around if a big problem that companies have faced is that they want to grow, and they see an opportunity for growth, and they could easily hire another 30, 40 people. But the moment you cross 100 people or 200 people, 100 people, then if for some reason there's an economic downturn and you're unable to afford to keep on your roles, all the people, you didn't have a right to retrench the surplus workforce. And if you had more than 100 people, you needed to wait for approvals, etc., before it could be done. Now, I think the number has been increased to 300. And 300 covers almost every single company in India, because I think over 90-odd% of companies have less than 300 employees, which means that people can at least grow to a reasonable size, 200, 300 people. Then you can have some reasonable amount of surplus. You can build your technology. You can become more competitive, right? I think all those things happen. And once that happens, I think more jobs. What are your thoughts about the labor law reforms that are taking place in the country today, and whether you see them as undesirable? What's the flip side of these reforms? And will it actually lead to more jobs?
It's a great start, in my opinion. What has happened, as far as I understand, is mostly consolidation of certain laws. So we have more than 100 labor-related laws, and even more, and some more at the state level, because, you know, labor is a concurrent list item in India. So it belongs both with the union and the state lists. So about 29 of those 100 odd laws were consolidated into 4 codes. So there's a lot of ground that still needs to be covered. There are still several areas that remain open For example, you know, I was talking about Social Security benefits. These still are defined by size thresholds of firms. But one would want to know why, for example, a small firm of under 10 people not provide Social Security benefits, right? And these are the areas where we see heavy contractualization. These are the areas where, you know, small firms can easily fall within the unorganized sector. And this is the majority category, right? Small firms. So, you know, those questions still remain to be answered.
I think some of them are being addressed, right, Meenu? I think they're also talking about the unorganized sector employees also to be covered by ESIC and Employees Provident Fund, etc., all under one common UAN number supported with Aadhaar. So all that is going to ensure. They're also talking about getting over almost half the number of workers, I think 20 crore workers, 200 million workers. They want to get them registered on a portal, so that they are now able to track them better and, like, you know, track their progress. They're also talking about increasing minimum wages every 5 years and so on. They're talking about, they have increased the maternity benefits from 12 weeks to 26 weeks. I think, so they have done that. They've also offered flexibility to employers of deciding how this 48-hour work week should be sort of distributed. Gives people the right to work for 12 hours a day for 4 days and take 3 days off. Those kind of things can be done. So I think some of these benefits and flexibility should go towards encouraging more jobs. But what do you think? I mean, do you think this will happen? And how many more jobs?
I wouldn't be able to say how many more jobs that would help create. But you're certainly correct. I agree with you that you know, this is a great start. I also really liked you know, the bit about fixed term employment, right? So that's going to give employers a great deal of flexibility as well. You know, through the research, I also found, I think one big problem is actually contractualization, which needs to be addressed. And it would be addressed through a variety of these measures. You know, circling back to the larger problem about employment in manufacturing, this is one of the factors that I think doesn't make manufacturing attractive enough for potential employees, for workforce. So, and at this, on the other side, you know, let's think also about, you know, firms who actually do opt for contractualization. They do have to pay a premium for it. It is 8 to 12% more of their total wage cost that they have to pay in order to get, you know, contract workers. And so they are willing to take on that additional burden, economic burden, to have that ease to you know, ultimately hire and fire, that, you know, bringing it down to something as simplified as you know, that term. So moving.
But I think this hiring and firing is all well, I think, but for it to become, like you said, it has to also be attractive to an employee to join that, right? And today, they don't have alternate forms of employment and available in any other place. And the farm sector is woefully overemployed. I mean, people are underemployed in the agriculture sector. So they have, like, at least 100 million people are surplus in agriculture today. And therefore, we need to jobs for them. But I think there's also a social security net which needs to be there, so that people, I mean, if you want to provide employers with the flexibility to hire and fire, I mean, like, not great words, but the point is that if you want to be able to increase or decrease the size of your firm as in keeping with market demand, I think there also needs to be some kind of social security for people. Otherwise, you're going to find people are not going to join the sector at all, right? So I think that's something to definitely take note of. I think the government is trying to talk about, like, you know, some kind of social pension payment and various other schemes which will kick in for people irrespective of whether they are in the organized sector or the unorganized sector. They also talk about the need to provide 15 days wages for every year. I mean, like, gratuity covers sort of going to be there for across multiple sectors. So I think those things may make a difference. But I think the flexibility that this provides should encourage more companies to sort of take advantage of this and grow with a little greater confidence.
Yeah.
That's what I feel.
I think it'll have to be a balance between, you know, business-friendly policies, but at the same time, one that, you know, take into account worker welfare as well. And I keep going back to, again, firm size, and it's a direct linkage with productivity. So, you know, if we actually are able to aid productivity, if we are able to help increase productivity through tweaking the firm size bit, which would, of course, translate into higher margins for our manufacturing companies, which will make them able to afford to pay better, to offer quality jobs, you know, then you're thinking about also training and skill development as well, but also social security benefits and higher pay. Manufacturing also pays less than, you know, the current average. It's a small sample study that was done by Monster and IIMA, I think, but it did talk about how manufacturing pays 10% less than the international average.
If worker productivity goes up on account of being in larger firms, then what would happen is that these large firms become more competitive. And because they become competitive, can actually grow even further. And more such firms, and there's more growth, and with more growth, you would have greater employment, right? So I think that's the way to sort of move forward in manufacturing. But, you know, it's very easy and tempting to believe that all the woes of our manufacturing sector has really to do only with the labor laws. And that is important to know that that's really not true. Because if you look at manufacturing jobs in India, they're there only in four states. Really, they're only in four states. There are Tamil Nadu, you have Maharashtra, you have Gujarat, and you have
Haryana.
Haryana. These are the four states in India which have manufacturing jobs of any reasonable size and scale. And the labor laws have impacted all states equally. And these four states somehow have managed to still create labor manufacturing jobs. If Rajasthan recently went on during the pandemic and then came on to say that we need to, lots of our people are unemployed, we need to create an environment in which more jobs can be created. So we're willing to put all those labor laws on hold and allow employers to come in and feel free to go out and like hire more people, right? But the fact of the matter is it didn't really make a big difference. So, I mean, Uttar Pradesh is also talking about making some of these laws go away. But so let's understand that, you know, it's not just about the labor laws. There are many other aspects, many other factor conditions which determine whether a particular state can generate employment or not. And I think many of those factors need to be taken into account, including things like, you know, do you have power? Do you have good quality power? Do you have roads and other infrastructure? Do you have railheads and access to railheads and transportation networks so that your supply chain can work in an unhindered fashion? Do you have good law and order in the state, which will allow people to feel comfortable to do that? Do you have good schools and colleges, etc., so that the children of employees can, like, you know, go there? Which means that if those schools and colleges are not there, then like people are going to be hesitant to move to those places, even if large factories were to be set up. Then it's about quality of life in those cities, which are there in all those states. All these things sort of play a big role in determining whether new manufacturing enterprises can be set up in all these states. So I think while we had a good conversation today about the labor laws and how they disincentivized firms to grow big and kept firm size small, and the fact that small firms are less productive than large firms, therefore less competitive and therefore less likely to survive, and therefore do not employ enough people. So I think that I liked your hypothesis, and I do agree that I think the size of the firm has had a problem. I think the labor laws have provided those disincentives. But today, I think we need to be able to think beyond those as well. I think there have been some level of reform, and time will tell us whether these reforms are adequate to get us to the kind of manufacturing job numbers that we want. As we speak, the number of manufacturing jobs have fallen quite dramatically in the last couple of years. And therefore, we need this to really grow and pick up. So I look forward to watching those numbers with great interest over the next few months and years to come.
And I'll join you on that.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Minu. It was nice talking
Likewise,
to you.
Likewise, thank you and, for having me here.
Yeah. All right. Bye-bye.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week, Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.